Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Phileas Club. This is episode 53 for February 2015. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Phileas Club. My name is Patrick Beja, and this is the show where we get people from different parts of the world to tell us how they've seen the news from the past week, the past month, even. I think last month we had a pretty cool episode, and it led me to a new description of the show. The way I now like to describe it, it might change, is I think this is a show not for necessarily convincing people or disagreeing people, but just disagreeing with people, but rather it's a show to for listening to people. So I like that conceptual justification for the show. Now, of course, as much as I like it, I think we're going to have trouble following it for this specific episode, and we'll get to that in a second. But before we get to that, I'm going to introduce two of the guests for the show and two returning characters. I'm talking as if it was a new video game of a series. The two returning characters are Maria from Sweden. Woohoo!
Yay!
How's it going, Maria?
Yay!
I love to be a video game character. And it feels like yesterday. I mean, it must have been 2.5 years ago since I was on the show, but
yeah,
it feels good to be back.
Yeah, it's just like riding a bike.
Yeah.
And I thank you very much for getting on that four people bike today. I'm really glad to have you on, especially since we have a question about how the media has been covering the terrorist attacks in Copenhagen in Scandinavia, because my wife, who's from that part of the world, saw a very stark difference between the way French media covered the terrorist attacks in Paris and the way the Scandinavian media covered the ones in Copenhagen. So we'll talk about that. I was going to get into like how have you been doing and how's it, what's new in your life, but I don't know if we want to get into that. You have more children, but
no,
that's about
it. I have two children. You make it out like I... sound like I have a little cord here.
Yeah, well, that's the way I imagine it, because
getting back into the real life when you know you can think your own thoughts and start following the news again, and you're not having porridge in your brain anymore. So
yeah, you know, that's basically the way I imagine parenthood to be, which is probably because I don't have any children of my own, but yeah. That's basically the image I have. Hordes of oatmeal-throwing children, babies.
Yeah.
The second person I'm welcoming to the show, again, is Letad. And I'm trying to remember how to pronounce your name correctly from Thailand.
The very Thai way to pronounce it would be Letad. So the emphasis on the tat.
Okay, Letad.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, exactly.
Oh, cool. Yes, I got it. Letad. I'll try to pronounce it correctly every time. I can guarantee.
Yeah, no problem.
What time is it for you? Now it's 4 p.m. in the afternoon for me and for Maria. What time is it for you?
Oh, it's a comfortable 10 p.m. No problem.
Oh, that's okay. I was worried it was going to be like 2 a.m. or something.
No.
How have you been going for the past, it must have been at least same as Maria, even more. Two and a half years, 3 years?
Yeah, no children or anything, so.
So just
doing my things, doing internet business, stuff like that.
Cool. All right, excellent. Thank you for being on. And then, even though, I'm happy to have the returning characters from different countries, of course, but I have to confess, and this in no way diminishes the joy that I feel having Maria and Letat back on the show, but I must confess that I'm even happier. I mean, it touches my soul in a very emotional way to have Turkey back on the show. The return of Turkey. How are you doing?
Can we have a drum roll right now for my entrance? Please. The menace of the French guy, Mr. Patrick from Saudi Arabia, Turkey, is back here to ruin his life and destroy it forever.
Yeah, that's basically, it's joy and dread at the same time. So it's true that, you've been a big part of the show for its first run, for the first 4 years, because you were on a lot and you had
some of the best times I've ever had.
Oh, thank you. But you were a little bit busy when we relaunched, and we didn't know if you were going to be able to make it at some point, but you are. And I'm very happy, and I'm sure a lot of listeners are very happy to hear you again. How have you been in the past 2 years?
Oh, good. I'm very good. Just bought our new house, just moved in, so we've been busy with that for a while. Started a new job and so on. So continuing with life.
Excellent. Still in beautiful Saudi Arabia.
Still in whatever. So beautiful, I would have a question then.
Okay, still in Saudi Arabia then.
Yeah.
What time is it for you now?
It's 6 p.m.
All right. So from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m., it's a relatively modest section of the Earth for this episode. And talking about this episode, let's stop the gushing, and let's actually start talking about the news. The first thing I wanted to talk about, because it's been a pretty big deal in the first portion of the month here in France, at least, and I'm guessing in Sweden also, is the result of the Greek elections, where the Greek people, since the crisis a few years ago, has been suffering severe restrictions on what we call the austerity, so very harsh economic measures to reimburse or to pay back or to stabilize their economy. And it's kind of, there's a growing feeling that the people cannot sustain that course of action for much longer, or at least they're tired of it, and they've elected people who just want to relax those requirements a little bit. And it didn't go super well in France, at least, or I guess the opinions are very divided. It used to be that people, in my feeling, were mostly saying, hey, the Greeks are the ones who, got themselves in that situation by overspending money they didn't have, and that we actually in Europe bankrolled them with. And so maybe they should be a little bit careful and pay that, and, be careful with their spending. Now it's almost like it's divided between those who say, well, it's not going to fix it, and other countries are not following they're not doing what they promised. And why should the Greek do it too? If no one is following their promises of, the amount of debt being reduced and that kind of thing. There are two different kinds of opinions. And I'm curious, before we, let's not even go into the quality of the reporting, but I'm curious to hear if that even moved, you know, was reported on and how important it was in the media in your guys' country, because it's obviously very important for Europe. Not sure it's as important for Thailand, for example. What about the Greek elections, Letat?
Yeah, it wasn't that covered that much. Usually news about Greeks are when there are protests and violence. So we don't really go into economic policies and things like that.
Okay, so because for us, it was kind of an earthquake. It was like, holy crap, the ones who don't want to pay the money back have been elected. So it didn't really make it.
The news didn't really cover too much in detail, like the difference between the parties and like what each party would do. Yeah, mainly with the speed. Yeah, there are protests against the party that has been elected.
Okay, well, fair enough. Turkey, what about Saudi Arabia?
Hardly, just a few mentions. It's not our money anyway, so.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
Yeah, we don't really care and worry about it. And plus, we had our own internal changes, so we were more concerned about those.
Okay. Maria, you live in Europe. Certainly, the very...
You live in Europe. You must have something to say. Yes,
I mean, the Swedes are like the Protestant ethics of like not spending more than you have, right? They're very careful about those things.
We do believe in paying our taxes. And I think that's, I must say that the left-wing party had majority was of course something that we see cautiously with positively, even because you have to remember that we weren't so affected by the economic crisis. From the EU countries, we were probably one of the countries that was least affected by this. So economically, for the EU region, I don't think the everyday man or woman are caring that much whether Greek is paying back or not, because we're
really?
Kind of
but
fine
it impacts
up.
Our
we're kind of fine up here anyway. What I have heard debates about, it's the Greek tax system, that they don't pay their taxes. They have to pay their taxes. What are they doing? And then I heard...
Dark taxes, by the way.
The what, sorry, Turkey?
What are taxes?
Well,
it's what happens when you don't have oil. That's
the concept
that arises.
Oh, that thing.
You know,
okay,
when you want to have a good health care and schools for everyone and equal rights for everyone, you have to have a strong state that can pay for all of this. And then you need to pay
tax. You mean communism, right? I get it.
Now. No, that's not communism. Come on.
Socialism.
But I must ask you guys, because I've heard... if this is a fact or not, we should have a Greek guy on here, but that to pay the taxes in Greece, you have to yourself walk into the tax office and pay your tax. It's not deducted from your pay. Like in Sweden, we never see the tax money. My pay arrives at my account, and then the tax has already been deducted from that amount.
Well, actually...
And if they have to actively go in and say, hello, I would like to give away certain percentage of my money, then I understand that a lot of people choose not to do that. It's like asking a criminal to, if you commit a crime, could you please go into the police station and and report yourself?
Well, the funny thing, in France, it's the same system. You don't get your taxes, your income tax is not taken from your pay. It's only you have to then declare the money you have earned. But of course, you know, there are systems where the companies notify the state of how much money you've earned. So they kind of know already. It's difficult to avoid. But yeah, it's not taken from your pay from the get-go. And that's been a hot topic for a while. Letat, you wanted to say something?
Oh, no, just to chime in that for us, it's deducted from our pay.
Really?
For personal. Yeah.
Huh. So yeah, we're the only ones.
We file tax returns.
Actually, it's something that's been debated for a long time. Should we switch to a system where taxes are taken from the pay? And I think one of the issues with that switch is that for 1 year, since, you know, we pay in 2015, for example, I'm going to pay taxes on the money I earned in 2014. So if we one day switch, then let's say in 2015 we would switch to taxes deducted from your pay, then I would have to pay the taxes for 2015 immediately from my pay and pay the taxes from 2014 as well. So, and it's also very complicated on the administration
side. I
don't see
why, I don't understand why you have to do that switch, to be honest. I mean, we also pay taxes based on what we earned the year before.
Oh, really? So yeah. Your money is taken from your pay from the estimation of what you will earn based on what you earned the year before?
Well, we have a percentage that is deducted from our pay no matter what. Yeah, it's the previous year, taxation year that is
taken into
setting
account,
the rate. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, okay, maybe that would work. We do have a system where we agree to pay our taxes in 10 steps, monthly increments, or 10 monthly withdrawals. But it's not everyone does it, and then you have to take into account multiple sources if you have some. And but yeah, I think it would be worth switching somehow, because the fact that you get your money in your bank account and then you have to go see the state and say, here, have the money I already got, is very frustrating.
And then you feel like you're losing your money.
Yeah,
but I never had that money, so for me it's like whatever, I get my pay that I always get, and also I get schools and hospitals. Yay!
Well, we do get those as well, to be fair.
I know, you pay a lot of tax.
Yeah, we do.
It's interesting, all right, though. I mean, yeah. Culturally, I think an honor system wouldn't really work in Thailand or around here in Asian cultures.
Really? You mean people wouldn't go and pay their taxes?
Yeah, for example, I mean, it's just like anecdotally... people, like, if they go to, when Thais or like Asians around here go to like maybe Western country like the USA where you can return products, people will take advantage of that system. And same thing, like, for example, some Chinese restaurants, they serve dim sum. And if, for example, if it's in Taiwan, the mother chain, if their dim sum is not perfect in any way, you can, if you say there's five, you can return it and ask for five new ones. And when they opened in Thailand, they did not continue this policy because they knew people would like eat four and then poke one and then ask for new ones.
They would do that?
Yeah. I mean, people would just take advantage of like loopholes. And people see it as kind of like, it's like, yeah, it's a loophole in the system for people to do that.
Hmm. Well, I guess wearing a dress and returning it the next day, speaking from obviously personal experience, I would imagine that happens from time to time. I was making a joke about myself wearing dresses
human.
Here. No.
Yeah, we know.
Okay, all right. This just wasn't funny.
Picture it, so just let it go.
I guess that I can understand, but returning the dim sum after you've eaten four seems a little bit extreme. But it's a necessity in Thailand that the government withdraws your income tax from your pay.
It's just something that we don't ever see it happening, like an honor system like that.
Interesting.
And to come back to the topic, it seems to be a big necessity in Greece because they're not doing it, and that's for the only solution. They have to pay their taxes.
Yeah, that's...
And I think EU should be a bit, give them a fair chance to build their economy.
That's the issue. They don't, you know, they don't, well...
But they do have to pay tax in return. I mean,
yeah, of course. That's the issue that made, that was the plan in the beginning was, we'll give you a little bit of leeway, but you have to pay it back. And the issue is, from my understanding, is having, you know, the economy hammered with a lot of austerity makes it difficult for the economy to restart. And that's why they're getting really sick of all of it. I have to say, the opinion, in France is really divided. Apparently in Sweden, people are a little bit more on the German side of things, like, well, you have to pay your taxes. And that's the way it is.
I can't speak for the whole Swedish population, but
of course you can.
That's
Maria.
The voice.
Come on, that's what we do here. All right, let's move on to something a little bit less funny, although the misery of the Greek people isn't funny anyway. The terrorist attacks in Scandinavia, in Copenhagen, that happened a week or 10 days ago. I wanted to get your take on it, Maria, on the way the media has been reporting on it. But before we do that, I just wanna go very quickly to Leta and Turkey, just to ask in a few words, without redoing, as I was saying before the show started, without redoing January's episode with Mahmoud, who explained in great detail how those actions were being viewed in his country. Just very quickly, what's the general take on the terrorist attacks in Paris and Copenhagen, in Thailand and Saudi Arabia? Maybe Letad first.
I'm sorry. So you're talking about a Scandinavian one?
Well, you know, the Scandinavian specifically, but more in general, if you have something to say about the, well, not you, but, you know, if you can go over how it went for Paris as well.
Yeah, the one in Copenhagen was not covered as much, actually. It was covered as more of like another terrorism story. But in Charlie Hebdo, there was more news and more coverage about kind of what Charlie Hebdo was, the underlying intricacies of like media expression and just basically the Islamic aspect of it, because there's two underlying currents in the feeling of Thailand right now. So just an update, I forgot to say this, but we are actually still living under martial law. We're being governed by the military, so there's issues with free speech, but there's also issues kind of like a little bit of anti-Islamic feeling because of Islamic terrorism in the south. And although that a large part of that's more due to ignorance about like the difference between Muslims and Islamic terrorism.
How much of the Thai population is Muslim? Do you know?
Actually, a small percentage, but in the southern part of Thailand, it's mostly Muslim.
Okay.
So it's clearly, there's a clear region of Muslims and Buddhists.
Okay. Turkey, however much you want to go over the topic, you don't have to spend too much time if you don't want to. But
it's kind of divided here. The majority, of course, do condemn the attacks in general. Very few minorities support it. I think where the real difference comes is in the majority that do condemn these attacks, and it was a big deal in the news, is basically those who say, what did they expect? And this is something that would have happened no matter what. This is what happens when they attack Islam or the Prophet while they still condemn it. And then you have those who, of course, condemn it no matter what, and whether what did they expect does not come up. So that's where I think the major division is. The majority do condemn such attacks, and they have, but some would just say they should have expected this. This was going to happen. They need to behave. So that's
so basically the division. A similar landscape to what Mahmoud was describing in Dubai in last episode.
Yeah, basically the same, yeah. Mm.
All right. And to get back to Maria, of course, you know, everything is fair game. But one thing I wanted to get your impressions on, more specifically, is the way the media has been approaching the ethics of discussing the attacks. I think one element that was very striking in the way the French media covered those events was, although it didn't have the over exaggeration of what we could imagine from a US media 24-hour news cycle. It did have a lot of, you know, plastering the faces of the attackers and saying their names all the time, and, you know, having going into as much, maybe not as much detail as they can, but yeah, kind of. And the situation is a little bit different because for us it went on for a few days. So they were, you know, people, the attackers were being searched for and people needed to know what they looked like. But in general, it felt a little bit more shameless, like a little bit more sensationalistic for France. And my wife, again, was saying that in Scandinavia, it was much more ethical.
Yeah. But it's, you also have to bear in mind that this happened like a continuation of the Charlie Hebdo attack. A lot of things have, or a lot of feelings have already been expressed. A lot of things have already been said. You have come to a state where you, or mind where you're more reflective about what's going on. And the debate in Sweden has mostly been regarding what can we do to not radicalize young people that live in our country? What is freedom of speech? Is the freedom of speech total for everyone? And also, they did point out very clearly that this guy, they focused on that he was like a young guy that was in a criminal gang. He wasn't particularly religious at all. The attacker in Copenhagen, he was more of a, he was a thug, basically. Angry young guy who been seduced by internet propaganda and did these attacks. So they didn't see it as an attack from the Muslim world. It was a terrorist attack and it was serious, but you quickly moved on to discuss further implications of this. For example, there has been a lot of debate on, you know, how much resources should go to the government, how much resources should the government put in to fight terrorism. Should we have armed guards outside Islamic buildings, schools?
You know, that's it's very interesting what you're
I'm sorry. Yeah. I said Islamish when I was saying, say Jewish. Jewish.
Oh, Jewish. Okay. Jewish,
yeah. Because we have armed guards outside Jewish schools in Stockholm now.
Mm. Yeah, same
after
here.
After
these
attacks. Yeah, mm. Yeah.
It's very interesting what you're going over with the what can we do aspect, because that's something that, again, my wife points out very frequently. It's how results-oriented people seem to be in the north of Europe. It's like, all right, you know, we have issues, we have difference of opinions, we have difference of philosophies, but like, let's look at what we can do, what will be effective, and not get hung up on philosophical differences for the principle of philosophical differences. And that seems to be also the case in this instance.
I think the reason for the media reporting in this way is that you are very afraid up here that we're going to have an even bigger anti-Muslim movement, because we have huge problems with the that our third biggest party is an openly anti-Muslim party in Sweden. We have a lot of new racism, new Nazism in Sweden right now, and the cultural the establishment, the media and the journalists, the intellectuals, they all see down upon this because it's usually, you know, less educated, younger, unemployed men who are agreeing with these movements. You're very afraid to put fire,
to pour oil on the fire.
Yeah.
It's interesting because, again, in France, I would say that we haven't really settled down completely. Of course, the emotions are less raw than they were a month ago, but it's still a lot of infighting. And our, you know, the third party in France is also is the Front National, which is gaining a lot of representation. I wouldn't say it's as extreme as some of the parties that we can see in other countries, similar, far right-wing parties, but it's certainly not a cute and cuddly party. It's an extremely far-right policy that they have. And there's a lot of racism, of course, that goes along with it. But for us, I don't think everyone's concerned about lots of things, and the way we're not even resolving it, but the way it's going now is that everyone's yelling at everyone. It's kind of discouraging, honestly. It's almost like Turkey and me in a discussion. It can't come to anything good.
I like to mention another aspect that has been debated in Sweden a lot, and that mm-hmm. is one of the prime targets on the Copenhagen attack was the Swedish artist Lars Vilks, who has done, you know, a picture of the prophet, which is a tiny little pencil doodle that you hardly can make out what it is. But he did this years ago as a provocation, and he has been attacked 3 times since then. And the debate has been, does he have any moral obligations? You know, was it right of him to provoke Muslim people, and everybody saying, does he have the right to do that and put other innocent people at risk when he continues to provoke these voices? And obviously other people, when you mention that, says, well, you can't even question that, because everyone has the freedom to express themselves in how, you know.
It's not only that. Let's be honest, whether he provokes or not, we're the ones who give him credit when we actually take notice and start making a big deal out of it. If people just ignored that guy when he did that doodle, nobody would have even, the guy would have just gone quiet, because he wasn't getting the attention he wanted out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
It's a debate that's also been happening, obviously, in France. And the second issue of Charlie Hebdo came out a couple of days ago. They're trying to get back to normal, but they've been having trouble finding cartoonists that would work for them. Obviously, people are a little bit afraid, which is sad, since that's the aim of terrorism, obviously. But it was interesting. We saw one of the newspapers made a compilation of, not a compilation, but a calculation of all the different targets of the Charlie Hebdo drawings from the past few years. And it was something like 60% politicians, French politicians, 30%, I can't remember exactly, but like 30% famous people, you know, celebrities, and 20% religion, and like 1% Islam. They were making maybe as much, maybe more fun of other religions as well. So it was interesting to put that in perspective well. All right. It seems to me from a little bit afar that the Scandinavians are a little bit more focused on trying to, they seem more responsible to me. And I'm not sure why that is different. But when I look at the way things are going in France, it's, again, everyone's yelling at each other and no one's actually doing anything. So,
well, let's be honest, Patrick. The attack in Paris is different. It was organized. It was planned. What happened in Copenhagen is just some crazy guy just decided to go out and shoot everybody, just like what happens in the U.S. every single day.
Every single day, yeah. But, you know, it is certainly different, but the reaction, I think, says something, because as Maria was saying, what they seem to be focused on is how to make sure that the kids are not being radicalized in those ways. And in France, it's being talked about for sure, but it's not like the focus of the important people's discussions. Anyway, we're not going to solve it today, but interesting to discuss. Last big topic I wanted to cover was the negotiations in Ukraine with Russia and European countries and others, which has been making the rounds for a few days. And the results were basically, let's push the problem to farther down the line, although they did find an agreement. But it was certainly a huge part of the reporting on in France for the majority of February. Letad, again, has
you're
this
gonna be
been
very impressed by Thai news and the foreign awareness? I would say Charlie Hebdo was the biggest story in the past few months. So okay. it was bigger than the Ukraine ceasefire and negotiations. So, yeah. Even in February, yeah. It was not a main topic of foreign news, usually isn't anyways. So, yeah, Charlie Hebdo was more because of the importance of like free speech and things like that.
You know, I'm really looking forward to getting to what has been making the news in Thailand, because we're so immersed in, you know, the Atlantic, you know, US, Europe, and Russia obviously is a big part of the periphery of Europe, and that issue has implications for the entirety of Europe. So for us, for me, it's almost unimaginable that this would be a big deal, because Russia is one of the, you know, most important powers in the world, in its ability at least to destabilize things in general. So
yeah, we're usually concerned with the U.S. and China for Thailand. Ah. Europe is actually kind of third in terms of international news.
Right, that's fair. We like to think that we're more important than we actually are. So
no, it's because of our alliance. There's actually some tension. The U.S. and China have been kind of like stealing Thailand's allegiance over the many, many years.
Really?
Yeah.
All right, we'll get back to that. Turkey, Russia, you also don't care? I mean, you're selling more
Seriously,
oil.
Seriously, dude, what's the deal with you and European news? Do you have any international news for us?
Well, that's what's been making the international news. That's what's been making the international news for us.
Europe is not the international news.
Isn't it?
No.
No, but I mean, that's when we talk about international news, that's what's been mentioned for us.
That has been covered here.
Okay, all right. Scaring me now. I'm thinking I'm making a bad job.
But only for one reason, because Russia is involved. And Russia is involved in Syria and in oil. So that makes anything that's Russia-related news here. So
yeah, that's what I was, you know, I opened with oil when I started talking to you, so.
Yeah, so it's been covered. It's more coverage about Russia than about Ukraine, about how Russia is acting there and how is it taking over slowly the Ukraine and how it's having problems with Europe and the U.S. So definitely it's kind of news. It's not really in the top of the news here, but it's being covered. People are keeping an eye on it. But as we said, here the news is all about the Middle East. We have Syria, we have Iraq, we have Egypt, we also have Yemen now. So it's there's a lot of news here. So when you talk about news about Ukraine, it really doesn't come on the top.
All right. Just quick question because I move on to Maria, and then we talk about actual international topics. Are they so for us? Putin is kind of the bad guy, not, you know, the horrible tyrant, but he's certainly the guy responsible for the issues that we're seeing there. Is Russia the bad guy, if we want to oversimplify things, which maybe we don't, but in the Middle East, is he, you know, is Russia kind of...
Yeah, that's oversimplifying it.
We oversimplify it a little bit in France and maybe in Europe. So I'm asking if you're... You know,
now, here there is a love-hate relationship with Russia. There's the love of seeing someone standing up against the U.S. So Putin, for some people, is seen as a hero a fighter, someone who is bringing back the great Russia to fight against the evils of the US and so on. Then you have Russia's involvement in Syria and supporting the regime there and so on, which makes people hate Russia for that. So you kind of have this balance of love-hate when it comes to Putin.
Hmm. Okay, that's an interesting take on the reasons why Putin is good. Obviously, for us being more on the side of the U.S., again, we're oversimplifying here. I understand this, but we look at Putin as the bad guy, which I'm not sure he's, you know, a nice guy. We've heard about the assassination that took place today of an opposition leader, which, by the way, I'm talking about my wife because we discuss these topics every day, but she's adamant that it's probably not Putin who's behind this.
Yeah, but here it's not about whether Putin is nice or not. People look at it, as I said, they look at Putin as the person who is reviving the great country of Russia, the ex-Soviet Union. He's bringing a great country to the world that can fight and stand against the U.S. Whether he's a dictator, whether he's killing opposition, whatever he's doing, at the end of the day, he is standing up against a country like the U.S. That's how people see him when they see him as a hero. Then you have those who would see him as an enemy when he starts supporting a regime in Syria, and then you have all of these problems of war and so on. So it's complicated here. I honestly get confused when I sit with friends and family and people and we start talking politics and Russia comes up and I just sit there and stare at them and wonder, okay, I'm trying to figure out exactly, is he a good guy or a bad guy?
Marie, you were going to say something?
Yeah, well, in Sweden, this is top news, obviously. Sweden is sitting on the threshold, on the doorstep between, you know, tiny country.
My wife would argue
middle,
Finland. Finland is the USA. One that's sitting on the threshold.
Yeah, but we share that feeling with the Finnish people that, oh my God, we might end up in the middle of the fire here, and we're a little bit scared. And I must say that the media picture of Putin in Sweden is Putin's, actually, not Putin, is that he is crazy, you know, that he is unreliable, he doesn't abide by democratic rules anymore, and we're a bit scared of him. And today, when obviously the biggest story of today was the murder of Boris Nemtsov, I even read a headline saying the hope for future Russia is dead, because he was kind of the sound voice, according to this person writing the article, in the opposition to Putin. So we are a bit scared. And we also have noticed increased activities in our waters around our country. There's a lot of reportings about sightings of submarines and aircrafts that are in our territory that are supposedly Russians, which take us back to the 80s when that fear was really big in our country and we were hunting submarines every day in the media. Most of them turned out to be otters or, you know, fish. What do you call it? Lots of fish together.
You know, I think there's one thing that is striking is that, and again, my wife keeps saying this, the West doesn't understand Putin or Russia. And that's the scariest thing. We don't understand what his end game is, what his motivations are. And that leaves us to run our imagination wild.
Yeah, exactly. Because he is unpredictable.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, that's why he's definitely big news for us, and he's, you know, the Ukraine is the center of attention, not because it's in Europe or it's the Ukraine itself, but because of the implications of what it might mean for the rest of the countries. And I can tell you that Finland is looking at this very, very seriously, because they are actually at the doorstep of Russia, and they have a very tumultuous relationship or history with Russia. And the thing is, they know how to deal with the Russians, and we don't. And yeah. That's something that, again, comes back regularly in my conversations with my wife, which is she looks at everyone's reactions and analysis and saying what we should do or what we shouldn't. And she's like, but you just don't understand what this means or why he's doing this. For example, with the assassination of today, there is no, in her opinion, there's no point for Putin to be at the source of this. If there was someone he wanted to get assassinated, it would be someone that was a lot more dangerous politically. So it's probably someone that, you know, was upset or fucked up or something in his, you know, in the administration or some kind of military person, but probably not him. And basically he's trying to...
That's interesting, because here it's reported on, like, yeah, and he's just one amongst many that has been killed by Putin's regime. I mean, they don't say there are proofs.
Certainly not the only one, for sure.
But they say that when you read the newspaper, you get the feeling that this probably is Putin is behind this.
Yeah. Well, that's the feeling we get as well here. It's just that it comes back to the feeling that we just don't understand what he wants.
Yeah.
And that leads me to believe that maybe we just don't understand him and Russia, as as my lovely wife theorizes. But all right, let's move on to other parts of the world, which are not Europe or the US, and ask, in the case of Thailand, for example, what has actually been making the news? What's important for you guys, Lathat?
What's important for us? For February, there were recently bombs detonated at our biggest department store. It's called Sayan Paragon. And okay. It was important because there were no one has been caught, and no official reason has been given. And it came, it was detonated not long after it was announced that former Prime Minister Ying Lakshinawat is going to be impeached. So she's being impeached beside not holding a political office, and for the charges are related to corruption based on one of the populist policies during her reign, which is related to subsidies given to rice. But at the same time, other people would accuse the military themselves of doing the bombing, because in order to be able to hold martial law. So we still have martial law in Thailand right now.
Before you go on, just so I understand the context, my knowledge of Thailand is abysmal, and I apologize for this. How long has martial law been in effect?
Right. So the current coup d'état has been in effect since May of 2014, and we have been in martial law ever since.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's been in place. And since the military is in power, they just still use that as their tool.
Okay.
So since the bombing did not kill or injure anyone, I think it may have injured two. Both sides have used that as an accusation, because it was not like a quote unquote violent bombing.
Mm. And so okay. So that's weird that it wouldn't get claimed. And is exactly. there an end date in view for the end of martial law?
No. The Prime Minister, which is also the leader of the coup d'état, refused to give a deadline. Originally, he said the next election would be for in quotes like soon, and would not receive a date. The latest he said it's been February of 2016.
Wow.
So people would expect the martial law to be in effect until there is actually an election.
Okay. But then what's the point of the bombing to prolong the martial law if the date is more or less expected anyway? That's weird.
It's just people will still continue to protest. Like, why should there be a martial law? But then the military will still do what they want to do. So, their censorship is pretty prevalent. If you criticize the army publicly, then they would take you in for a re-education.
And do you know what that entails?
They disappear for a bit, and they people do come out safely, but it's basically just probably kind of like a camp. It doesn't seem to be violent, but people that come out do tend to keep quiet.
Is there any, you know, the fact that someone would appear on an international podcast and talking about these things? I'm guessing.
I think I'm only talking about what's in the news that people know.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Well, let me tell you, this is not something that has been making the news for us, and it makes me a little bit ashamed, I have to say.
No. What's funny is that it's not like something.
I mean, the bombing, obviously.
The bombing, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, the situation in Thailand obviously has been discussed, not recently. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a small bombing, so. And it's not violent.
Just to take it just a little bit wider, since the main topics I discussed and I called international were very Europe-centric, unfortunately, do you have another, you know, in general, what's been at the top of people's discussions aside from those bombings that were more, you know, Asian-wide?
Right. Well, actually, for international news, we usually keep tabs on, if it's not China and the U.S., it's usually ISIS, because we're approaching the ASEAN community next year, and 40% is of ASEANs are Muslim, and we're just thinking about how do we prevent the teachings of ISIS from becoming prevalent in the region. And Malaysia is actually the current chair of ASEAN right now. So they are kind of in charge. But usually the news that happened would be like in terms of what ISIS has been doing. Because we do actually have hundreds of ASEAN people in the ISIS army.
You mean when you say ASEAN, you mean the Asian?
Oh, yeah, sorry. ASEAN? Yeah, Southeast ASEAN? Asian countries.
Right, yeah, right. ASEAN, the association, yeah. Association of Southeast Asian Nations, actually.
Exactly. The new EU. Okay.
Yeah. the EU of Asia. So
exactly.
you see, it's always related to the EU, actually. All right. Turkey, same treatment, local and maybe a little bit more region related.
Well, most of the news here, of course, at the beginning of the month was about the change in the kings, as the late King Abdullah died and we got a new King Salman in power, and the changes in power and everything that followed up.
That did make the news for us. So, see, we're not completely horrible.
Only because we have oil. Otherwise, you wouldn't think about
obviously,
it.
Obviously.
Other than that, the top news is, of course, all the events happening in the region. You have Yemen, where the Houthis are at war and they have made a coup against the elected government. You have Syria, the fighting between the regime and the Freedom Army and ISIS and their war in Iraq and Syria. You have Egypt and their fight with the diplomatic and media fight with Turkey, their local fight between the Ikhwan movement and the military government are so elected. Military government and so on. So it's news everywhere. Football, Qatar hosting the World Cup. Is it going to be? Is it going to happen? When is it going to happen? Europe says no, it's too hot. And Qatar says it's not that bad.
It's the weirdest thing ever. Admit it. That's so strange to me.
Why?
It's hilarious. It's hilarious.
The Why whole situation is it so strange? Hilarious.
Well, they don't have any grass and it's 40 degrees warm and it's in a desert. How can you possibly play football?
Well, don't worry, technology can make that possible.
It's you
should have thought of that in the beginning before giving them.
I'm sure they can build a air conditioned stadium. Yeah, exactly.
And cool
they actually are building that.
That would be brilliant for the environment.
Yeah.
Imagine the energy consumed.
that's the Scandinavian talking. We even in France. Oh yeah, no, I think in France we would be a little bit concerned. But you know, I'm struck with a thought listening to both of you guys. It's that our concern in the past couple of months has obviously been a deep, long discussions about Islam and Muslims and all of that. And we still don't have news or understanding from the countries that are actually the biggest Muslim countries in the world, and the, you know, the regions where you actually have Muslims. We just consider it very much in the context of our societies. And of course, you know, it's fair because that's the way things go and it's the most relevant to us. But you were talking about Yemen a second ago, Turkey. And again, I'm burying myself here to view of everyone. I didn't even realize that I looked it up on Google map just now. I didn't have the image, the geographical image of Yemen being just on the border of Saudi Arabia. It's unforgivable for someone who, you know, for someone who wants to understand these issues. You have to know these things. And
And Yemen is a huge deal for Saudi Arabia right now. As you said, we border them directly, so that affects us. And the Houthis are basically Shiites who are being supported by Iran. So that's even affects us all. Even the U.S. is being affected by that. Mm-hmm. When Iran gets an influence in Yemen to a different border with Saudi Arabia. So it's being a big deal. It's so bad right now that the Houthis have taken over. They take in over the capital Sana'a. The president had escaped from house arrest and he went to another city, major city Aden, where he establishes government there. And all the GCC countries, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Bahrain, Qatar, and Emirates and Oman, have decided to move all their embassies to Aden to support the government against the Houthis. So it's huge news and it's going like crazy and people are keeping a watch on it here. And today, this week, we're going to have two visits, one from the Egyptian president and one from the Turkish president, trying to fix their relationship with Saudi, and Saudi trying to fix the relationships between the two governments. And it's just crazy here. You should come to Saudi and see how crazy things are.
Well, to be fair, we did obviously hear about the situation in Yemen, but it's not... We can't know about everything that's happening everywhere in the world all the time. That's not what I'm saying. But obviously, the nature of Islam, we should at least understand it, you know, understand it enough that we know what's happening where, more or less, in the world when it affects us so much in Europe. And I'm afraid we worry about it when we have an attack and then we don't really care anymore when... It's obviously it's not the same thing, but it's just it feels like there's something amiss here. There's something that's not, you know, working the way it should.
And well, in general, Islam is moving through a phase that a lot of religions have gone through, where there has been a downfall, and then there's a struggle to come back up, and then there's different views of how to interpret it, and it's just a phase that every faith has gone through. Christianity is no exception to that, and trying to live within that society of understanding that you have different faith and you have to accept these different faiths is kind of difficult when you are basically coming from countries that are in war and shambles, and they have to blame someone for it. And what's an easiest target? Just blame the West. It's the easiest way to blame. You don't need to blame your neighbor or so on, because you're already blaming them and blowing them up. But let's move on to the West now.
All right. Maria, anything to add? I think we've talked about Europe and local stories for Europe for a good long time.
Yeah, but if you make me feel ashamed now, so I'm not going to...
Well, I was going to talk about Dominique Strauss-Kahn and his trial and the sordid sexual activities that were taking place in the hotel where he was having his parties and the way they were being described. But I think that's not necessarily...
I thought you were French, just love to have fun. What's the problem with you taking a guy to court for having fun?
Well... You know, even us, it was a little bit too much. He was being so cavalier about the way he was describing all of this and just smug about everything. Of course, knowing what has happened in New York for him as well. It's just, it was too much. Even for us, I think we were a little bit, not shocked, but like, ooh, okay, that okay, you do your thing, now we're done. And he wasn't convicted. Because
over here, it's reported on... like, look at these crazy French, and then we laughed a bit.
I think prostitution is a big issue as well because of the... my guess would be there's a question of gender equality that comes into it as well. Am I wrong? Or?
Well, of course, everybody is against prostitution.
Okay. Well, you'd be surprised, but if you're civilized is what
you're
going to
say. If you're civilized, you are.
Okay.
I have a kind of a local story that I'm not sure if I dare to bring up, but I thought since we have Turkey here...
Ooh, I'm intrigued now. Go ahead.
No, because a big debate in... something that has been debated the last few weeks in Sweden is... in our government, it's been debated whether we should or should not export weapons or weapon materials to Saudi Arabia, because... we are currently under an agreement where we are allowed to do that, but according to our law, we can't export weapons to undemocratic countries. So therefore, there has been a debate whether or countries that are not respecting human rights. And the voices here says that, well, since men and women in Saudi Arabia doesn't have equal rights, it's not...
well, you can't. Yeah, the human rights are not respected, and
therefore we can't export weapons.
All I'm gonna say, seriously, we're talking about weapons and human rights.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Yeah. We're such bloody hypocrites up here.
Seriously.
We're impartial. We don't take part in any conflicts, but we do export weapons all over the place.
Lata, you were saying first world countries with hand on your countries. Face. Yeah. You know, it's funny. We had a somewhat similar issue. Well, discussion or explosion of joy in February as well in France when the deal to sell 5+ billion worth euros worth of fighter jets to Egypt happened, and it's the same kind of hypocrisy. I think Maria, if you know you happen to have an enormous deal like that that can change things for your country's balance, I think usually those objections tend to disappear, and the parallel with weapons and human rights is an interesting one as well. So
yeah,
thank you for that, Turkey.
Turkey.
It just sounded so easy.
No, it's only easy because it's true. All right, I think we're going to gently start to head out of here. Usually we try to have a fun / kicker / weird story in the end, and I see in the notes that Leta seems to be having one for this episode, so unless anyone else has others to follow, maybe you can take us out of the show with your weird story that seems fun indeed.
So I think I'm going to pick the funnest one. It's related to, I think I seem to have like a military theme, but I mean, yeah. So last year, the military, the government, I should say, released a video about 12 core values that all children should have. And in one of the in it, there's it's basically kind of like a song with like animations of what's going on. And then during one of the animations, it shows a child that is painting a picture of Hitler with a Nazi swastika in the background.
How does that happen?
The lyrics don't address it, and it just passes by. And and there's two official stances on it. The official stance from the government says that, oh, it's about the girl protesting the kind of like the dictatorship of the mother. But people suspect that it was something clever by the people that were assigned to work on it in protest of the government.
Oh, you think it was? So I'm guessing it was taken down fairly. Or
it's taken down, but you can find it on international press.
Hmm. And you think that one of the theories was that it was the people who were working on that video that inserted it as a protest against the military? Is that what
the public opinion seems to believe that? Hmm. Yeah.
Interesting. Can you go over the other one, the first one that you mentioned?
It's so you just like the first one, right?
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Although you know the Hitler one is I don't know if I should laugh or cry about it, but.
Yeah. So foreigners in Phuket. So some context. Phuket is a nice island that tourists, one of the more popular tourist attractions in Thailand. And all the foreigners go.
Did you ever go there, Maria?
No, I haven't. But it's a very popular resort for Swedish.
That's very lovely.
thank you. Russians also love it.
That's what we could do. We could just all go to Phuket and have fun together.
I noticed that you have too many, a lot of Russians and Indians in there area.
Exactly, a lot of Russians. I was gonna say when you were talking about Russia, I mean, our feeling towards Russians is we actually like Russians because there's a lot of Russian tourists.
You know, they're buying a lot of things in Paris now as well. Although recently, it's the Chinese that have overcome them in numbers, but.
Yeah, we like them too when they're Chinese tourists.
Yeah.
So recently, as part of the government, they've been clearing a lot of things that have been kind of like just there in Thailand. One of them is being beach beds. So since you've been to Phuket, you've probably seen the abundance of like a lot of beach beds in on the beach. And where basically you would pay the people controlling the area to be able to just like have a nice nap and sleep in the area. But
you mean an actual bed or
an kind of like I don't
like
know,
a beach bed, a thing with
a beach bed, so the military ordered those to be cleared away because they did not. It was kind of like public property, and also people believe it was kind of like controlled by the mafia. So after it was cleared away, a few weeks afterwards, a group made all of like foreigners that have protested that they want the beach beds back and that they would not come to Thailand again if they were not brought back. They're very disappointed.
You have to stand up for what you believe in. There are important things happening in the world, and when you witness one, just stand up and say something. Beach beds are an important part of our vacationing culture, and I think they should remain.
Excellent.
All right. Good one.
This is the bit. How come you haven't discussed this, Patrick? Seriously. This is a very important question.
Okay.
I'm scared. Was it black and blue, or was it white and gold? Seriously, we have to discuss this.
It is black and blue.
I agree with you.
Okay. Oh, wow. Wow. Okay. Wait a second. Letat, black and blue or white and gold?
I was white and gold. I'm sorry.
Oh, you tie. Maria? Do you know what we're talking about?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay. Oh, lucky, Maria. Oh, I'm so envious.
Oh, you're lucky. You're lucky.
So actually, until yesterday, I didn't know either. And it appeared in my Twitter feed, and I had to research it. So for those, you know, one last One last instance of public service for our listeners. If you've missed it, apparently there's the picture of a dress that's been making the rounds on Twitter and the internet in general. Probably came out through Reddit, as most things do, or 4chan. And it's a picture of a dress that different people see in different colors. And it's the same pictures, and people have been fighting over what the colors that dress is. Some people see it black and blue, and others see it white and gold. And it's sort of, there is an explanation, a scientific explanation of some people have like more cones in their eyes, or, you know, science stuff that I don't understand. But yeah, so it's been a gigantic fight. And if you Google black and blue robe or something like that, I'm sure you're going to find it easily. And blue, oh, it's a dress, sorry, black and blue dress. If you can Google that, actually, I'm going to put the link, the Wired link in the...
I get the
you have
link
it?
Up. Yeah, but I don't understand, because it's clearly a white dress with some golden stuff on it.
Oh, my God! You are terribly wrong. But, you know, let's not fight about it. I said at the beginning of the show that this is not a show...
But on the other hand, I see another picture of the same dress that is clearly black and blue, so... I wonder if this is some kind of hoax.
No, it's not. It's just there are different balances of the you know, the white balance is different on different pictures, and it shows how other people see it and tries to make you understand how it can look different. and
it's,
you know, yeah,
I, this seems to be the one truly international news that's been prevailing in all of our countries.
This is the mythical international piece of news that we were looking for. We found it. Thank you, Turkey, for bringing us back to the
light. It was covered on CNN. I think it was covered on Fox, on BBC. Seriously, everybody covered it.
Well,
yeah, McDonald's here,
not Sweden.
Fries.
Sorry, Lita?
With a blue background. Yeah, McDonald's posted a photo of their fries on a blue background and asked what color people thought saw it as.
I know PlayStation and Xbox also did that. Everyone's been using it for promotion purposes. That's pretty good. And Maria, I'm fairly sure it was talked about in Sweden as well. Although maybe not, you know, maybe the
I'm sure
serious...
it was over the Twitter feeds, etc. But
probably.
I'm not sure it didn't make the national news.
Yeah, I'm sure it didn't.
We are having the World Championship of cross-country skiing right now, so everything else is the only thing that is reported on.
It's not real skiing. Skiing is when you go down the mountain. You're not walking with skis on your feet.
Come over here and we'll have a match of cross-country skiing, and
I'll show you
a thing or two.
I think what we should wait for is for Qatar to actually host it in a few years, and then we can all meet there.
Hey, don't make fun of Qatar. They might actually do it.
All right, I think that's going to be it for us for this show. Before we move on, can I ask you guys where people can find more of you on the internet, if there is, you know, you have an activity online? Let's start with Letat.
Yeah, I'm best found probably on Twitter and Instagram, Lertad.
Cool. Okay. Twitter and Instagram, Lertad. Maria, do you still have some semblance of activity between the aggressions of your children?
Hey, I'm more than just the mom.
Are you? I think all parents are just parents. But that's because, yeah.
Yeah, you called me out. I've not been... The most activity I show on the internet is that I'm posting pictures of my children on Instagram. So.
There you go, proving
but
me
I,
right.
You can find me if you want to, you know, tell me that you disagree with me or something on this show. You can write to me on Google+, where I am Maria Moore.
Maria Moore, excellent. Moore, it's two O's or one
yes.
O? Oh. That would be
O-O-R-E.
That would be like a I don't know, a singer or something. Maria Moore. It Yeah, never mind. Okay. Turkey, what about you?
Well, you can find me on Twitter if you like. It's Turkey Alballa, TurkiAlballa.
Wow, can you do that again?
Turkey Alballa, TurkiAlballa.
Excellent. LLAA. That's the important part. Thank you. Thank you, Turkey. Thank you, Letad. Thank you, Maria. For me, it's not Patrick on Twitter. And you can find the show on FrenchSpin.com. You can also support the show on Patreon. You will find the look. The links pretty much everywhere on the site, on the metadata of the file. So you can find the link that, which is, I'll give it to you now, patreon.com/thePhileas Club. And you can join the hordes of supporters and patriots, as I like to call them in French, who support the show. So thank you very much for listening. We'll be back in a month with a new show. And until then, giant hugs in artificial snow in Qatar for some reason. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.